I'm Paul Wegraff, Director of the Delaware Division of the Arts, and your host for today. Joining me today are two individuals, Jill Carlson, Director of Public Engagement for the Delaware Museum of Natural History, and Inez Wallens, the Director of Visitor Engagement from the Winterthur Museum, Garden, and Library. Welcome, Jill. Welcome, Inez.
Thank you. It's really nice to be here.
Thank you very much.
So glad you can join us today. Two beautiful properties up in northern Delaware, representing just tremendous history of Delaware, both in the historical founding of the DuPont family, as well as the natural history of the area. And the Delaware Museum of Natural History is in the process right now of undergoing a transition. So, Jill, why
Yes.
don't we start there? Talk a little bit about the Delaware Museum of Natural History, soon to be the Delaware Museum of Nature and Science.
Yeah, I'm super excited to tell you about that. We have been for probably 5, 6 years now, have been really focusing on changing the way that we do things, from a didactic approach of just, shh. Sit there, be quiet. It's a museum, don't touch that. Everything's behind glass. To really trying to engage our visitors and this whole new museum metamorphosis, which is what we're calling our capital campaign, is really geared towards that. We're going to have a regional gallery that represents Delaware and the Mid-Atlantic. We're going to have a new world journey gallery, which is featuring ecosystems from around the world. And also, we're kind of changing some things up. We're going to have a lot more interactives. So basically, we are taking it down to the studs and rebuilding it all. So when you come, it's going to be a whole new experience, and we're really looking forward to it. And with all of that, the best part of it all is designing and implementing all brand new programming that will be based on ecosystems and climate change and major science concepts, not just natural history, but more moving and embracing other science concepts and focuses.
I was intrigued by that nomenclature because I mean, traditionally museums of natural history do have that scientific component to them. How much is that changing? Is it just a matter of branding, or are you really developing new programming, new curriculum?
Great question. We definitely are developing and have been developing new curriculum. So even before this is all taking place, we have in the past 8 years really focused on opening up those silos and embracing other types of sciences so that we weren't just bringing natural history, but we started even with our partner organizations, of which Winterthur is one of them, but we have others with some universities and other community-based organizations, and they have really, stepped up to the plate and helped us really make this change quite easily, actually. So we're not stepping into brand new territory with programming, but we're going to have a lot more of that new type of programming. So we're excited about it.
So I would just jump in. I would just
Sure,
jump in and
absolutely,
say that,
Inez.
while we're right across 52 from one another and our lands are sort of abutting one another, I would say that our staffs really didn't know one another very well prior to this partnership. So it's sort of like an arranged marriage because we felt like we were sitting on a gold mine. They were closing. They needed space to be able to, we wanted them to maintain their stakeholders. They see a very big school and family audience. Winterthur wants to expand its school and family audience. It felt like a natural opportunity to reach across Route 52 and say, hey, maybe you want to think about coming over to maintain your programs and help us with ours. So there's a buzzword in the museum field that's called co-creating programs. And Jill and I talk about that a lot because you're telling, we are kind of in an arranged marriage. Two staffs that didn't know one another, that are all responsible for learning, engagement, public programming, who really have very different styles of working. And you're looking at two institutional cultures that are a little bit different from one another. I mean, Winterthur has a very different collection and a different tradition and a different set of activities, but there's so much in common that we've been finding as we get to know one another. I would say the big thing that I think is that Henry DuPont in the planning of Winnetour was heavily inspired by nature. So obviously mm-hmm. that made sense to look to a natural history museum. And we're actually working on an exhibition that we'll be opening together called Outside In, which looks at nature-inspired design. It makes sense that we're hosting it, but I don't think we could have done it without you and your collections. And therefore the programming kind of just trickled after that. We looked at what our strengths were, what are the things that the Delaware Museum of Natural History offers the public that could happen at Winnetour? What are the things that Winnetour is doing that we could do better if enhanced with staff and energy and content from the Delaware Museum of Natural History? And what are the territories that neither of us ventured in and maybe we could do together? We're still kind of working through that because it's a partnership. And when two cultural organizations work together, I would say things take twice as long. When you deal with eight people on each team working together, it probably takes eight times as long. But I think the end result is going to be something that neither of us could have done on our own.
Very true. What you're both articulating is the fact that even over the last 10 months, when many things have slowed down, you're planning and thinking about the future. It doesn't sound like it's slowed down one bit.
No, it hasn't.
Inez, you're fairly new to Winnetour, I believe. Is that correct? What brought you to Winnetour?
Philadelphia is my hometown. So it was kind of a nice coincidence that Winnetour happened to be creating a position for somebody who looked at all of the external visitor facing up experiences at Winnetour and putting them under one division or one umbrella. So being a very large institution, you would think that there would be many silos, but there are actually many departments and divisions at Winnetour that all engage in educational programming. So how do you bring that under one umbrella, even if it's just conversationally or aspirationally? So we've got like the people who are working with the content of the core decorative arts collections, which are world renowned, and then this amazing gardens and estate and property. And I'm not even sure the inside people and the outside people always work together, even under our own umbrella organization. So it's breaking down some of those silos. But then when you add a whole new crop of staff members with expertise that is really complementary to Winnetour's to help us look at the same things more critically or from a different perspective, I mean, I think that's when the sparks fly. And that's what we're excited about.
Now, yeah. I'm curious, with the Museum of Natural History, soon to be Museum of Nature and Science, undergoing this change, did that precipitate bringing the two institutions together in the kind of thinking that you're doing? Was that kind of on the plan in the plans prior to that? What was the effect of all this?
We have, and periodically throughout the years, have done different types of programming with different departments at Winnetour. And, you know, this just kind of seemed like such a natural fit. I mean, they are right across the street. And there are programs that we do very well that Winnetour hasn't really ever done for summer camp, for instance. Mm-hmm. So we're going to be running our summer camps this year out of Winnetour and excited about exploring those grounds outside and in and around there. And also working with their staff. They each have something so specialized and knowledgeable about that we're excited about expanding our own knowledge and our staff's knowledge. For instance, like I was saying, with the murder mystery coming up, it's actually set, you know, in a time period at Winnetour using some very well-known historical facts and maybe some that are not so well-known. And we're going to incorporate that into this fun, interactive, adult-only program there. And I think that was something that they were really excited to work with us on, and we certainly were excited to work with them on.
I think one of the challenges that we found early on was that with the global pandemic that all cultural institutions are having to pivot and do more digital online programming, Winnetour pivoted. We're doing an awful lot of virtual programming that is geared specifically for teachers and students. And one of the first things that happened was Jill said, we could use a location at Winitar where our school program person can be based. We need a place for that person to work out of. And naturally, the two staff members, one on each team, who worked in school programs said, we could partner together and come up with some new opportunities to offer the schools virtually. And we hope once schools are able to then start taking field trips again, post-COVID, that they'll get to come to Winitar's campus, but be introduced to the entire cadre of programming that the Delaware Museum of Natural History offers your mobile museum. I see, here's where you could tell that we're starting to work together, because I'm plugging your programs right now.
I know, right?
Yeah. Right. The mobile museum program. I mean, all of those things are just happening on a different venue, but we're still teaching some of the same concepts.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating because certainly both of your institutions are well known as educational resources to the schools. In a former life, I was a school teacher in Northern Delaware and nice. Frequented both locations with school groups. But it sounds like you've been pretty busy trying to serve as a resource to the schools, even at a time when some of them not even convening, let alone taking their students out on trips. I'm curious, how has this impacted your two organizations with regards to the docents who participate and support these programs?
That's a great question. It's been a little difficult as there are, we have docents from, that are older, and because mm-hmm. of all that's happening with COVID, they're just not safe or feel safe to come out. So some of them we haven't seen in many, many months, and others are, have rallied in and they will lead some virtual programs. They'll come in and help care for our live animal collection, things like that. So basically that's how that is. And with the amount of programming, and most of our full-time staff are covering those, we do every once in a while have some of our docents and part-time staff coming in to help us lead virtual programs.
Mm-hmm. So I would say that are we going to need to go to break?
Let me just do real quick. Sorry to interrupt. Just want to remind our listeners that you are tuned into Delaware State of the Arts here on News Radio 1450 WILM and 1410 WDOV. Before I so rudely interrupted, we are joined today by Jill Carlson, the Director of Public Engagement for the Delaware Museum of Natural History, and Inez Wallens, Director of Visitor Engagement for Winitar Museum, Garden, and Library. Inez, I cut you off. I'm sorry.
So I'm going to remind you that the question that you asked Jill was about the effect of docents during yes. the time of COVID, who would be conducting and delivering school programs that have now pivoted to a virtual or online format. And I would say the same thing is exactly the case at Winitar. Winitar Museum, Garden, and Libraries doesn't actually have docents. We have paid museum guides.
Okay.
We have 22 school program guides, most of whom have been teachers. So they are real troopers. A handful of them who, like Jill said, are not of that age group where they were affected by the concerns to come forward at COVID, said, we could learn how to do this virtually. It's a whole new world to teach virtually mm-hmm. and do it well. And when you're used to interactivity, it's even harder when you're doing it on a screen with a group of students. But we've dived right in, and many of them have said, we're in, teach us how to do this. We're actually leading some of the same programs, but doing it on a screen instead. The hope is then when schools do get to have field trips again, all of those groups will want to come visit. But we conducted 67 last month, 50 the month before. I mean, teachers are wanting it. They're looking for opportunities to enrich their curriculum, engage their students. So they're very excited that cultural institutions like ours and others in the greater Wilmington area are offering these things. So there's not a lack of schools that are interested, which has been great. But I feel like between the volunteer staff and the paid staff, we've been able to meet all of those challenges. And we even contracted somebody whose native language is Spanish and said, maybe we need to be able to offer to non-English speakers as well. So mm-hmm. Winitar's kind of, this is like wide open Winitar time. We're trying some new things together. Some will work well, some will tinker with, and some may become standing staples of our each of our institutions long after the Delaware Museum of Natural History reopens and reemerges.
Exactly.
We're hoping.
Yes, we're hoping that this will not be a one-year thing that we are doing this, you know, partnership. We kind of went into this saying, you know, some of these programs that we create, let's not even just do them for, you know, 2021. Let's continue this and offer this and continue to offer these types of programs. Either, you know, hopefully they'll come to our site when we reopen as well. So we'd like to have that nice cross-pollination.
Gil, what's the due date for the reopening of the Delaware Museum of Nature and Science?
Boy, that's a tough one. we went in saying it was going to be, you know, January of 2022, but, you know, it's all construction. So I think we're looking at about March of 2022 right now. So, and we might have a few soft openings, if that makes sense, you know, for our board of directors, maybe for our families, for partner organizations. It'd be great to have Winterthur over there and have a staff party with them. Maybe something for our members before we open to the general public. So we're kind of talking about maybe a little bit of a softer rollout before we actually open to the public.
Yeah, I would imagine, the renovations that you're going through are more complicated than people might imagine, both your facility and Winterthur. When you want to redo a room, it's not just pushing the furniture to the side and redoing it. You've got all sorts of conservation issues you have to take into consideration.
I think both institutions do. Just the collections are a little bit different to be working with. I think we found that. I mean, Winterthur has big ideas too. We would like to reimagine our visitor center. So that kind of study is happening right now so that we can be even a broader, more welcoming institution in our community. And one of the things that we're learning through this partnership, I think, is that the best of the programs that the Delaware Museum of Natural History currently offers are things that are letting our staff kind of churn their wheels saying, you know, they're offering that this July, maybe a year from now, they can do programs there. We can do a similar program there. Families who could drop off kids at both summer camps. It was something that we hadn't tried before and just said, come join our program. Register for our program and watch how we do it. So one of the benefits I think that was maybe not initially planned was that both institutions are learning more about themselves and more about each other and how to steal the best of all possible program ideas and adapt them for our own individual institutions. It's an opportunity that a lot of cultural institutions don't have. So this kind of forced marriage is turning out to be a really fun and good thing. But it's hard work. Yeah.
I know we've been talking a lot about your educational programming, but Inez, I'm curious, we're not too far from the springtime, I hope, which is one of those prime times to visit Winterthur with the Azalea Gardens. What kind of planning is Winterthur doing for the budding of the flowers and the azaleas?
So I would say, because I came to Winterthur and then COVID hit, I actually haven't seen the beauty of our garden. So I am especially looking forward to that. But it actually is not just Winterthur, because the two institutions together are working on the azalea and bluebells, working on daffodil days. They do a big egg extravaganza, and we have never done that before. So there's a little bit of a crossover. There's it's end of March into April, and then May is when everything is in its full glory, I think. I'll let you know after I see it myself. But we've planned March, April, May programming that is really focusing a lot more on the outdoors. We think guests will feel more comfortable being outdoors in good weather. And what the museum industry tells us is that post-COVID, people are really going to be craving that experience. And they're going to, I think the cultural institutions are going to rebound. I think people are ready to come back. It may not be until the fall, but we're going to still be kicking and working together in the fall and the winter.
I'm seeing a note.
I would also say
that, yeah, go ahead.
Yes. We're being reminded that for the first time in many, many years, Winterthur is open in the month of February, where historically we haven't been. So while Winterthur members get an extra bonus of a couple of months of free membership opportunities, we're extending every member of the Delaware Museum of Natural History is coming for free to Winterthur. when they reopen, I'm sure that they're going to be reciprocating 1AR members to get to come to the new Delaware Museum of Nature and Science. So it kind of works both ways, but we're excited to be open in February at a time when traditionally we were closed and a lot of other cultural institutions followed suit.
I'm glad you mentioned that collaboration. That's great. Jill, you were going to say something?
Yeah, and on top of it, I was just going to say, and on top of it, not only do are they kind enough to let our members come for free, we also are providing programs, and where some of them are free for our members, we've extended that to the members of Winterthur as well. So it's really nice to have a nice mix. You know, this has kind of expanded both of our memberships and have given them a great opportunity to deal with both of our cultural institutions in a very unique way.
Hey, Jill, we and Inez, we've got about 1 minute left. So you've each got 30 seconds to tell our listeners how they can find out more about your organization. Jill?
You can visit our website at delmnh.com. I always forget. It's delmnh.com.
That's the Delaware Museum of Natural Delaware Museum of Natural History. Is that going to change after you become the Museum of Nature and Science?
Actually, that's the one question I will ask Jen of, who's our communications director, and she is saying yes.
She's nodding yes.
It's got to because yes.
Okay, but that website works for now. Inez, 30 seconds.
Yes.
Yes, our website is a little bit easier because it's winitur.org, but it's spelled W-I-N-T-E-R-T-H-U-R, winitur.org. And we have put our logo on a little bit of a diet. And so you might notice a little bit slimmer W for Winitur. Everybody gained weight over COVID, but Winitur's logo kind of lost a little bit of weight. Winitur.org is ours, and you'll get ready to see a brand new website rolling out sort of soon too.
Great. Well, Jill Carlson from the Delaware Museum of Natural History, Inez Wallens from the Winterthur Museum, Garden, and Library. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, our pleasure.
Oh, thank you for having us.